Once again, welcome back to another weekly episode of Grim Scenarios, where we're going through the experimental characters, how to play them, how to fight them, how to bluff them, how to run them as a storyteller. And this week, we're pretty excited because we're talking about, I think, my favorite minion, and we have one of my favorite guests back to talk with us about it. It is the Wizard.
Wizard!
And we're here with Ben Burns and, of course, Milk to discuss the minion that can be literally whatever you want it to be.
Yeah, what a legendary minion this is. I mean, this character is the subject of some of my earliest and fondest Clock Tower memories from long before the game was even kickstarted. I absolutely adore this character. One of my absolute favorites as well. I think all three of us are wizard lovers, and I just enjoy the adaptability, the flexibility, and the fact that you can do whatever you want with it.
Yeah. The wizard's ability is once per game, choose to make a wish. If granted, it might have a price, and leave a clue as to its nature. The wizard makes a wish, and its flavor text is, "Every man and every woman is a star. Love is the law, and love under will." Which is one of, I feel like, the more positive minion flavor texts out there.
That's lovely.
Yeah, it does sound like something Aleister Crowley might have written, to be fair. I imagine it's kind of...
I wouldn't be shocked.
Inspired by that, yeah. Lightly domineering at the end there. All right. Usually we talk through jinxes and errata at this point, but since the wizard, like the amnesiac, can be anything you want it to be, it doesn't have any jinxes, although... you should probably, you know, think about character interactions when granting a wish as the storyteller and just be aware of the sorts of things that are jinxed.
Yeah.
Look, I'm just going to wax poetic for a moment. I'm a huge fan of the wizard. I've seen a ton of people make really interesting wishes with it. It's a special character for me because of the characters. It's actually the last new character that I have pulled. It took me a really long time to actually naturally pull the wizard out of a bag. And I've genuinely enjoyed, now that I've pulled it a few times, I've genuinely enjoyed the ability every time. I've done something different with it every time. I've explored a lot of the interesting different spaces that you have with the wizard. And maybe my favorite thing about it is that it is explicitly stated in the rules for Wizard that after you wish, the storyteller should say, "Your wish is my command." And I absolutely love that.
I love player creativity. I love seeing what players want to do with games. I love seeing how players think differently. And the Wizard is that character. It's... Everything else that is sort of weird about Clock Tower, I guess, like, if you think of all the things that can create weird Clock Tower games, it's all coming from the storyteller's imagination, which is great, and I love seeing storytellers imagine, too. Amnesiac, atheist, funky character interactions, even, are all because the storyteller said, "Ooh, I wonder if my players will find out that they can do this," or... "Ooh, I can do this with an amnesiac ability," or "Ooh, I can do this with an atheist." But the wizard comes from the player's imagination, which means the storyteller can't really prepare for it. They can't really plan for what the wizard's going to do when they build their back. The player can choose what sort of minion they want to be and what sort of Clock Tower game they want to create. What they're limited by is the storyteller's responsibility to make sure whatever they do is going to be fun for everyone else.
Yeah, I think Wizard is the ultimate character that showcases players and storytellers working in tandem to create unique experiences. It starts with really simple things like the Shabaloth, where the Shabaloth kills two people and the storyteller decides if one of them comes back, and that's like a really simple example of that, and then it gets more complex with amnesiacs and things like that. But the wizard really is, I think, this taken to its logical conclusion. And that is one of the things that I love most about Blood on the Clock Tower, the fact that it enables that interaction between GM and player.
And for that reason, Wizard is probably my favorite character.
Yeah. We're all big fans, so let's just sort of jump in. You draw the Wizard token.
What do you do?
What do you do? Like, and
I think in my mind, go on, you go ahead, Emma.
No, I want to preface with this with saying, like, I try to like remind people sometimes when we're talking through how to play characters that this is all opinion. This is all like you could almost every character can be played in different ways. You can play as the fortune teller who announces day one, "Hey, I picked these two players and got a yes," or you can play as the fortune teller who tries to stay hidden until final three as you can gather as much information as possible without dealing with being poisoned or killed by an imp. Like, there's always different things that you can do as any character. That is never more true than for the Wizard. Literally anything any of us say in this episode is completely irrelevant to the extent it's not the sort of person you are and not the sort of person who wants to express how you make a wish. So we're going to talk about how we think about what to think about when you're making wishes and what we look for as individuals. But don't try to make Emma wishes. Don't try to make Ben Burns wishes. Don't try to make Milk wishes. Don't try to make like wishes you've seen, like wishes from other people who play on Clock Tower streams or Clock Tower content. Because the Wizard lets you make you wishes. So take what we talk about in this section to think about who you are as a player and what you enjoy. Not try to like say, "Oh, I saw on the Grim Scenarios episode that Ben says you should do this with the Wizard, so I'm going to do that with the Wizard." That takes away half the fun of Wizard, and you aren't Ben. You are you. And never is that more important to remember than with the Wizard. So with that, let's jump into how you play the Wizard.
Yeah, go ahead, Ben, please.
I was just going to say, I kind of, in my mind, I divide Wizard wishes into three broad categories. There's, and I think they more or less all fit under this. There's the, "I'm going to do something insane because I can" category of wishes. So these are things like, you know, "All the goodies are evil and all the evils are good now," or, you know, everyone's now a savant, or like, you know, something like that. Like the just kind of the lol meme Wizard wish. Then there's the loud and detectable but very clearly sensibly designed to help the evil team wishes. These are things like there's almost infinite numbers of these, right? But it's things like when someone nominates, I had one where it was like each time someone nominates, the number of votes required to execute goes up by one. So, you know, things like that are like, okay, this is messing with the good team's ability to competently execute, and it's forcing them to basically all go all in on the first couple of nominations. Like, that's very loud, and it can only be a Wizard wish, but it is very clearly useful to the evil team and something that they can work with. And then there is the third type of wish, which is the subtle Wizard wish. It's usually small. It's usually not some big, bombastic, game-changing thing. It probably flies under the radar, but it does help the evil team in some small way if they can action it. And I think when you go into the game as a Wizard, the one of those that you choose is going to be very heavily tied to your personality. Usually people who are like bombastic and silly will do a big bombastic silly one. Usually people who prefer to kind of fly under the radar will choose a subtle Wizard wish that doesn't do a great deal, or well, that doesn't you know, snitch on itself essentially.
Yeah.
I just wanted to add on top of Ben's categorization, the mode in which you're playing the game, the venue, the environment in which you're playing the game is also going to impact the type of wish that you're going to make. And the point I just want to make there is there are some wishes that only work in person. There are some wishes that work in an online live game context. And then, you know, there are some wishes that work in other contexts, like a text-only game, right? And you know, a wish that works in one of those formats might not work in a different format. The example I like to give is I wish that the clock hands go in a random direction each day, right? That, or each vote or whatever, that is going to have be something that you can definitely implement in an online or in an in-person game. That's something that, because of the mechanical tool that you're using, you can't necessarily implement it in an online game. And then maybe that's not a, maybe that's not even a wish that's sort of effective or useful in a text game, right? So, like, you know, and maybe there's other modes that I'm not thinking of, but, like, just remember that the types of things that you can do are going to change based on the environment that your game takes place in.
Yeah. Now, I have a, I guess I would say, a personal signature to my wizard wishes, in that every time I draw the wizard, I wish to be publicly announced as the wizard, and then for the storyteller to do something that I think is going to distract town from thinking about the things they should be thinking about, namely, who is the demon. I tell people this, and then I continue to watch them get distracted by my essentially meaningless wizard wishes. I even have a hat that I keep near my desk for when I'm playing online, so that when I'm the wizard, I can wake up day one and have my wizard hat on for the storyteller to announce that I'm the wizard. That's me. I think that goes, it's somewhere in between, I think, Ben's 2 and 3 categories. His, like, I found these wishes to be super effective. I ran a game recently where I got a Plague Doctor wizard wish as the storyteller. All my players know that my wishes are purely about distraction. And I just wished that I could sometimes say lies in public. And I did this. I lied a bunch in public. I, like, called people by the wrong names. I announced votes that weren't real. I did all this. And players still got so distracted by this, they, like, the fishermen refused to follow their advice. Because what if the advice was a lie? Like, you can get a lot of mileage just by tricking good players into thinking about something that doesn't really matter, so they're not thinking about the demon.
Yeah, every minute that they spend trying to work out what the wizard wish is and what it's doing to them is a minute that they didn't spend trying to work out who the demon is, right? And that's, yeah. I mean, one of the best wizard wishes I ever saw was someone who just asked me to announce that a wizard wish has been made. That was it. They just said, announce that a wizard wish has been made.
That's a
great wish.
And then
the good team just spent the whole game being like, what the hell is this wish? Is it this? Is it this thing that just happened now? Are you scratching your nose? Is that a part of the wizard wish? Like, it was absolutely ridiculous.
This is one of the things I think about a lot with regard to Clock Tower, which, and you could call it a distraction, but what I like to think about is attacking the other team's ability to process information, right? That is to say, good only has a certain amount of time each day to solve out information. And if you throw junk information, if you throw trash in their code, right, they have to sort through that trash to get to the useful information. And this is again, probably somewhere in between the sort of effective for the evil team and loud, but also subtle, you know, manipulation kind of wish. And you could kind of be in a lot of different places in there. A wish I made once recently was in a text game, and I wished for the storytellers to give out each day a piece of information that was encoded, just a piece of information in code that was given out to the whole town, so that people would spend their time trying to solve the code and what that coded message meant, rather than actually engaging with trying to find the demon. And that's a different version of the same Emma sort of distraction technique, but it gets to the heart of using up people's time and mental energy on things that don't help them find the demon. So shall we talk about that middle ground? Thing of doing something that's kind of loud, but is very effective for the evil team?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to actually talk about this, isn't it? Because the sheer, like, breadth of things that can potentially be done makes it almost impossible to talk about it in a general sense. But I think I've seen a lot of wizard wishes not really be loud, but not really be useful, because people have this tendency when you tell them they can do anything. It's a bit like, I imagine a lot of people watching this have got some experience with RPGs like Dungeons and Dragons and stuff like that. And when you get a relatively new person in that hobby, you'll often find that they will do really dumb stuff. They'll just rob everyone and steal people's trousers and, you know, kick people in the balls or whatever and cast spells for no reason and stuff, because it's like, oh wow, I can do literally anything. I'm not constrained like I am in a video game. I'm just going to try anything. I'm going to do mad stuff. And I think Wizard brings a little bit of that in people, where it's like, when am I ever going to get the chance to force the storyteller to call everyone Kevin or, you know, something like that? And it's like, oh great, you know, that's not helped your team at all. And it's basically solved a third of the game for the good team. But yes, it was quite funny. And I think if we're going to talk about the Wizard in terms of strategy when playing it, we are going to have to say that don't be discouraged from doing the fun thing like that, but we're now going to talk about things that are useful and not fun. Well, not fun, but, you know, not entirely just there to be fun. So what can you do that's useful to help your team? Well, as we've just said, things that are distracting and things that make the fundamental bits of solving a Clock Tower game harder to do. Where does information come from? What kind of things do people take for granted? The voting example is a great example of that, right? You never in a million years, when you sit down in the town square to take your vote, do you factor into what you're doing, who you're nominating and what you're saying. Never are you going to factor in the fact that that voting might be messed with. So that's a great example of something that you can do that's loud, that's distracting, and that immediately forces players to change their tactics and start thinking about the game differently.
Yeah, I was running some games at my house the other week, mostly an excuse to, like, you know, make a nice spread, but... So I invited some friends over and ran some games for them. And we had a wizard wish, where the wizard was just like, I want a wish that every day the second player who nominates dies immediately. And this wish was loud. It was powerful for the evil team because we massively quickened up the game. But it was also, like, super effective because... Like, essentially the way I hinted this before it happened was when the second person was about to nominate, I was like, are you sure you want to nominate? And they got scared. And eventually someone nominated and they died immediately. And, like, it just paralyzed the good team. They were so concerned about making that second nomination that, like, the first nomination was getting executed first every day. And it was so strong and it was loud and it was funny and good was, like, trying to think about why are people dying? Like, what is the condition that's triggering them dying? And a wish like that, it's simple. It's basically a beefed up witch that always hits. But it's like a wish like that can be extremely powerful while being very funny and loud. And it can even get some of that, like, processing power attack where the good team, instead of thinking about their information and trying to solve the game, is trying to think about, all right, why do people die when they're nominated? Is it because it's the first good player to nominate? Is it the second player of the day to nominate? And they talked about this constantly instead of, you know, piecing together their information and trying to solve the game. And it was very, very strong.
Yeah, I think you can look and kind of thinking, building on that, I think you can look to other minion abilities in the game for some sort of inspiration for what an ability might do, right? Maybe you can think about something like a roving Serenovus ability that goes in a particular pattern, or a poisoner that, you know, does something that hits particular types of characters, or that hits characters in the order that they are on the script, or something like that, you know. I think the fundamentals of loud wizard wishes that do something big are always going to involve, first of all, the storyteller making it clear to the good team that something is happening, and second of all, they're probably going to invoke a bigger cost to your team. Now, in the case of the wish that Emma just mentioned, that the part of the cost there is simply that evil players don't want to nominate second, right? And so you can get a little bit trapped by the fact that you're very clearly not going to nominate because it might get you killed, right? And so if an evil player gets nominated first, it becomes tricky for evil to lift an evil player off the block. We'll talk about balancing out wishes with costs and things like that later, but it's important to remember that you know, those big wishes, whatever they are, whether you're changing people's characters or whether you're causing misinformation or whether you're causing extra deaths, right? Those big wishes are going to have an impact on your team as well.
Yeah, I mean, on a fundamental level, they're always going to have one specific impact, which is that it's obvious there's a wizard in play.
Yeah.
And that's something you have to factor in. Like, the moment that wish happens, the good team have solved a chunk of the game already because they know one of the minions. If it's a two evil game, they've figured out what half the evil team is straight away.
Yeah, and that can be, you know, problematic if you're another evil player who's bluffing that you've been Serenovus mad for 2 days, or if good thinks that your double claim is being caused by a Serenovus, and then it's obvious that there's a wizard and, you know, whatever else, you know, somebody spots a wraith or something like that. Right. So I just think, like, it's important to think about, with a big loud wish, do something that you think is interesting. Do something that you think will help your team, but just be aware that there are going to be consequences.
I'm personally a big fan of the smaller wishes, which is weird because I don't do them, but I like it when other people do them. I like it when the wish is subtle. I like it when the question remains open as to whether or not a wizard wish has even happened. I think I like it because that wish exists even when there's no wizard in play, right? It's Schrodinger's wizard wish, essentially, because people are going to be like, if there's no big, bombastic, over-the-top wizard wish, people are going to be saying, have we had one? Is it just that we've not detected it? Are we not picking up on the storyteller's clues? Is it so small that the storyteller doesn't feel like it needs a sort of major clue or price or whatever? That's the region, at least as a storyteller, where I like wizard wishes to be.
I would say, like, if all you want to do with the wizard is say, this is my favorite minion that's not on script, and absent, like, one, maybe two exceptions, basically Goblin and maybe Mizzefles, depending on the script, and I would just like to be that with that minion instead of an on-script the wizard, I'm probably not going to clue that. Like, unless it's something where, like, it's like Goblin, and I need to say, you know, you should take Goblin claims a bit seriously this game, I'm probably not going to bother cluing if you want to be the spy instead of the wizard, if spy is your favorite minion. If you want to be the poisoner instead of the wizard, and poisoner is your favorite minion. Like, you, if that's all you want to do a wizard with, it can be powerful. And if I clue it, it's going to be a pretty light clue because all you're doing is trading one minion out for another minion.
Do we want to go for crazy over the top? We haven't really talked about the crazy over the top, completely change the structure of the game wishes.
Go on, Emmett.
You have to be very careful with these. I don't want to cite any specific examples because I don't want to pick on anyone in particular, but sometimes what we learn from wizard wishes is some of the rules of Clock Tower are there for a reason. If you're going to completely fundamentally change a rule of the game, I'll pick up myself. A few years ago, I made, let's call it a wizard wish, that put a lot of thief abilities in play to the degree where it was not possible to get anyone on the block. The storyteller was Ed. We talked about it. I said, oh, yeah, I'm sort of just curious how this will go. It was something like living players had the thief ability, but the Voodon ability was also in play. So dead players could vote, and if dead players voted, executions went through. It was a choice, and I learned my lesson, which was, I'm not going to do that ever again. it fundamentally broke Clock Tower. We couldn't execute people, and it was not a good Clock Tower experience.
Yeah, I think we can actually take perhaps not quite as severe as that, but we can take an example that you gave earlier on, Emma, of every second player who nominates dies, which is a sort of medium bombastic wish, and turn that very easily with a few word changes into one that's really over the top, which is each day the first player to nominate is executed. That is a basically game, not game ruining, but like game halting, I suppose, wish, because then all of a sudden the mechanism by which the good team wins the game is completely removed. And by doing that, you then put the storyteller in a position where they have to essentially invent new game rules or deliberately stifle your wish in order to make the game functional and playable. And I don't know, like, it's difficult to say what I would do as a storyteller in that kind of situation. But I always try not to say no to wishes. I really prefer not to have to do that. But in a situation like that, if I were to say yes to that, I would then have to come up with some means by which the demon could be killed in another way. And it would just, I would just have to circumvent it. I'd have to come up with something like, oh, the first person a good player says they think is evil each day is killed, or something like that. That would have to be the price of that. And all of a sudden, we're basically not playing Blood on the Clock Tower anymore, and it's just a conversation that I've made up some mechanics for. And I don't think anyone, including the wizard, is going to find that situation fun.
I think, like the simple example of a wish that is extremely powerful and also unfun is, I wish that my team wins the game, right? Like, that's like, you know, that's, it's a wish, you know, but obviously it's problematic, right, in a ton of different ways. And the first of those ways is, you're not playing a game anymore. You have ended the concept of playing a game. So any wish that makes you not be playing the game anymore is going to start creating a problem, right? Fundamentally changing the game might be the same thing sometimes. Sometimes fundamentally changing the game doesn't do that. But it's up to the storyteller to figure out whether the thing that you're asking them to do is making it not a game anymore or making it a very different game, and whether that's going to be fun for everyone to participate in.
Yeah, like, at its core, Clock Tower is a game where the evil team is trying to trick the good team into not killing the demon, and the good team is trying to identify and come together, put the pieces of this, they all each have a teeny little thread of the puzzle, and they're trying to put them all together so they can figure out who they want to execute. Like, if your wizard wish makes it something that's not that game, that might be even be a fun game, but it's not what the players came to play. If you wizard wish that instead of that, the demon is going to get to play a game of chess against a player of your choice and the winner wins the game, you can make that wish, and then we can have the demon and some poor player on the good team play a chess game. And maybe the demon's a grandmaster and the player they're playing against is never played chess before. And sure, I guess you helped your team win, but you're playing chess at that point. You're playing a rigged game of chess, not Clock Tower, and it's not going to be fun for the, you know, other 7 to 15 people who showed up to play a game of Clock Tower.
And an alternative conception of that same kind of thing is, I wish every execution is resolved by a game of Rochambeau, right? That is an effect that's in the game. But if people keep failing to execute for days and days and days because people keep winning or people keep failing to win Rochambeau, that might also not be fun because, again, it stops being a game of Clock Tower because you stop being able to kill players and get down to what's the exciting part of the game. I mean, the whole game's fun, but like the most exciting sort of dramatic part of the game is the final part of the game. And so things that like prevent the game from running in the way that it's meant to make bad, bad wishes, problematic wishes, for the storyteller to adjudicate.
I think it's important to note, however, because we've talked quite a bit about how these big bombastic wishes can be bad. I love that I'm just calling them big bombastic wishes now. But it's important to note they don't have to be. I've seen some really good ones. Like, one of my favorite ridiculous wishes was I was running at a convention in the Netherlands, and a wizard wished that in an alternate reality, we are all playing Trouble Brewing, and each night we shift between to the two realities. So on day that's one, cool. We've got a complicated script that's got like a wizard and, you know, some other stuff on it. And then on at the start of night two and throughout all of day two, we shift to a game of Trouble Brewing. I just looked at all the tokens that people wear and gave kind of a close approximation of what that character equivalent is on Trouble Brewing, and just kept shifting between the two. And people were getting confused. And at one point, a player came up to me and was like, I don't understand how, as the savant, you can have done this thing. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You're not the savant. You didn't pull that token. And they're like, well, what am I then? I'm like, well, you're obviously the empath. And so then, oh, okay. And then the following night, they're like, why don't you give me any empath info? I'm like, because you're the savant. Pay attention. And it was a really fun, and eventually the good guys figured it out, but it did waste a lot of time. It did cut people's information across two characters, one of which was inevitably more useful than the other. And most of the people were spending their time discussing this hilarious wizard wish and not actually solving the game. That's, I think, one of the best examples of how you can do a big silly wish and actually have it be useful for the evil team.
Yeah, I mean, you're still playing Blood on the Clock Tower. You're playing a very weird game of Blood on the Clock Tower. You're playing two different, very weird games of Blood on the Clock Tower, but you're still playing the game. You're still, fundamentally, the good players are still trying to find the demon, and the evil players are still trying to hide the demon.
Yeah. I played a game recently where the wizard, I started as the Xali. I made a player the wizard. They wished that anytime anyone publicly claimed their role, the storyteller would change them to a different character. So it was very big and bombastic. Like, players were changing character constantly. At one point, the Al-Sahir, who spent like 3 or 4 days like trying to hide and not making a guess, claimed Al-Sahir for the first time, got 2/3 of the evil team right, and then turned into the farmer that night. I decided this was a Khazali leech script. I decided that I wanted to be the leech, not the Khazali. So day two, I explained to everyone that I was the Khazali who had put the goblin and the wizard in play. There was a player who was Sarah Novus mad because the goblin had claimed goblin day one, and people like didn't really believe me, so they executed someone else instead, and I was the leech the next day. And they tried to execute me that day, and it didn't work because I was the leech now. It was like really helpful for our team. It was loud, it was fun, but it was still Clock Tower. Like, yeah, everyone's characters were changing whenever they tried to speak about it publicly. We had our bureaucrat turn into a gnome at one point. But it was fun, it was funny, it was loud, but it was powerful for us, but it was also hurt us because, like, you know, our goblin, who I had made the goblin because I knew they had a talent for getting themselves executed, did, in fact, successfully get themselves executed on day two, but unfortunately they were the Sarah Novus at that time. It was a really fun game, and it was a powerful wizard wish that, like, kept it within the general confines of Clock Tower and the general confines of what you'd expect on that script. Like, once people realized what was going on, and, like, they knew I was the leech because they had tried to execute me and I didn't die, they knew what they were supposed to do. They knew their mission still. They knew their mission was to figure out which one of them was poisoned.
Yeah, should we talk about the really subtle ones now? We've done the other two. I guess we've got to complete the set, right?
I think so.
I think there's a lot less to say about these, right? Because they are essentially normally just a minion ability. Like, it's usually something tiny like, I want this particular person to be drunk, or I want this particular person to survive execution on this script where there's plenty of reasons for that to happen, or, you know, little things like that that just give the evil team a tiny little boon or a tiny little boost, but that aren't really overly detectable.
I think if you could just like summarize those kind of wishes in sort of one sort of sentence, it's something like, I wish when something really bad would happen to my team, it doesn't happen instead.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much. Yeah. My demon's got one extra life or something like
yeah,
that.
Or
yeah. Something. I think something like really subtle is your demon's on the block and you're like, crap, I have my wish left. You go to the storyteller and say, hey, I wish the other minion gets the Scarlet Woman ability so we don't lose the game. I think that's subtle. I think that's fair. I think that that's a completely normal use of a minion ability. And I think, like, if I clue that, it's going to be a pretty soft clue, and I'm not going to cost that at all. Because all you've done is given essentially the evil team an extra life, which that's just part of Trouble Brewing, and frankly it's part of S&D and BMR too. It's like something that should be on, that's part of like the fundamental script experience, is sometimes the demon gets two lives.
And I think ultimately these kind of wishes are, I don't have any evidence to back this up, but I strongly suspect that if we were to get, you know, 1,000 wizard games with roughly 300 ish of each of the three categories of wizard wish, I suspect that the wizard wishes that are this type of wizard wish would have a higher average win rate, because ultimately they're always useful. That if you do some big crazy thing or something that's immediately detectable, it might be useful. It might derail your own team. It's a hand grenade, right? If you cook it too long and it goes off in front of you, then that's not good. Whereas these much more subtle, much less bombastic wishes are pretty much always going to be helpful in some way, and crucially aren't going to result in you immediately being outed immediately being obvious that there's a wizard in play.
Like most players, for various reasons, their preferred mode and the mode where they're most successful at playing as evil is when they get to be pretending to be good. That's not all players, but that is most players. So subtle wizard wishes are generally much better at allowing that sort of natural evil skill to be the one that's being highlighted, versus when the wizard wish is very loud and very obvious, the players can start meditating pretty quickly. This is that person's style of wish.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, runs the gamut from my style of wish, where I put on my wizard hat and say, storyteller, tell people I'm the wizard, to even with wishes that are slightly less subtle than that, but still loud. Like, you can figure out who is the type of person who would make this loud wish with the subtle wishes. It's because they're subtle. Like, the good team might not even know they've happened, which allows that sort of natural space for a lot of people of not being outed evil to flourish.
I was running a game over on our server, and there was a player who's newer to customs, had never been the wizard before, and he wished the other minion was a poisoner, and on night two he wished, hey, I wish that the poisoner gets to go twice. You know, kind of, he didn't know who to pick, he wasn't, you know, he's kind of still trying to figure his way out, and it was just a really subtle kind of simple thing, and you know, it was very powerful, very powerful, obviously. And I think I gave a cost, or I gave something, I don't remember what the specifics were. But like, that's a really simple thing where he's, you know, done something that's definitely going to help his team out, you know, but it's very quiet. It's not like super loud, but it's very strong.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's more or less functionally identical to that person wishing that they themselves also is now a poisoner, right? And two poisoners is not, it's something that you can achieve with a poisoner and an alchemist, really. So it's not remotely beyond the confines of an average game of Clock Tower.
It's basically just wishing to have a different minion ability, right? So it's not so over the top. Two poisoners are quite powerful, but you know, I think it's easy to get caught up in the idea that you need to do something massively game state changing. And I think doing something that is straightforward and effective is pretty much always going to be helping your team. And I think maybe what I've just discovered in this conversation is like, there's a sort of another scale of definitely helpful to probably helpful. you know, to maybe not going to be helpful at all. And I think that, like, when you're thinking about your wish as a player who's got the wizard token, that's maybe the space you want to be thinking about a bit too, is how helpful to my team am I going to be certain to, what was the one somebody wished, for you start knowing roles to get one more person in their ping than they should. And that's like a really strong effect for you start knowing roles to get one more ping in their information than they normally should. Except there was only one you start knowing role in the bag. And so it just meant the librarian got three pings instead of two, and didn't affect anyone else. If there were two or three you start knowing roles in the bag, it would have been much more effective. So it's like there's a scale there somewhere of, like, you know, probably helpful versus, like, you know, definitely helpful, that maybe is worth thinking about too.
Yeah, and just to be clear, it's worth noting that we play a lot of Clock Tower. We have no lives, and so we pull the wizard quite a lot, and we get to experience the full spectrum of all of these and try them all out. But I completely get that someone who maybe plays Clock Tower once every 2.5 months, that person might only pull the wizard once in their entire life. And the temptation to do something crazy and hilarious and amazing with it is, I completely understand why you would choose to do that over something really subtle but useful. So don't feel like this advice of us saying we think something subtle is more useful means that you should do something subtle. Like, go ahead and make your dreams come true with the wizard.
Yeah. Like I said, like, I don't really disagree that subtle wishes are generally more powerful. Yet again, every time I draw the wizard, I'm gonna put on my wizard head and ask to be publicly announced as the wizard. Clocked Out is the type of game you want it to be. Like, and if you want a game, your wizard wish to be loud and bombastic, you can prioritize that over, is this the most useful thing for my team? And, you know, frankly, fuck anyone who tells you that you were wrong for making the game more fun for you versus doing something that would help your team win more. Like,
yeah, that's absolutely.
We play games to have fun. Like, you're trying to win, but you're playing to have fun. And if you're going to have more fun being loud and bombastic as the wizard, then you are going to be doing something like sneaky and subtle and like extremely powerful. Be the person you want to be in the world.
Yeah, especially if it's fun and funny for everyone else as well. Like, obviously, there are scenarios where something can be fun for you but miserable for everyone else. But if you're making everyone laugh and have a good time, you're going to remember that. Or more importantly, everyone's going to remember that way more than they're going to remember the time when you made one really good move as a minion.
Yeah, so go ahead and wish that the storyteller calls everyone Kevin. Because to be honest, everyone's definitely going to remember that, and it's going to be fun and a laugh. Kevin on the Kevin. I sometimes talk about characters and like scripts and Clock Tower teaching us lessons. And I think the wizard teaches you to play your game, right? That's ultimately what it's telling you, is play the game your way, play your game, do what's fun, hopefully for everyone, but try things that are going to be fun for you.
Yeah. Should we move on into sort of fighting the wizard?
Yeah, I think this might be a pretty short section of the podcast. I think our broad advice in other times when we've talked about the wizard is how to fight the wizard. Don't.
Yeah, that would be my main advice, is don't use your brain power worrying about what the wizard did or didn't do. Use your brain power getting social reads on people, exchanging information, and trying to find the demon. Using your normal techniques for exchanging information and getting social reads and trying to find the demon. Like, I promise you, that'll be more effective as a way of fighting the demon than trying to solve the precise language of the wizard wish.
Yeah. You know when you was at school and a kid would annoy you, and you come home and you say, "Mom, this kid's really annoying me." And she'd turn around and say, "Just ignore him. He just wants attention." That's the wizard. Just take that advice. you should be fine.
there's science here. Like, your brain, broadly speaking, this is a very, very big generalization. Your brain, broadly speaking, has two types of processing that it does. It has autonomous processing, that stuff that's so ingrained in your brain that you think about it and do it automatically. And then it has active processing, that's stuff that you actually have to actively think about. When you start playing Clock Tower, everything in the game is in your active processing. What roles do, how they interact, what, you know, you have to go back to the script and look, and what is the poisoner? I don't know. What does pears mean in chef, right? When you've played for a long time and all that stuff goes into your automatic processing, right, then you're using your active processing to get social reads, build worlds, solve the game, try to trick other people. You know, you're using it to lie, to tell the truth, to do whatever, right? You're using it for actively playing the game. The wizard puts you back in that state you were in when you very first started playing and you don't know what the rules are, right? Those rules that are in your automated processing get dragged back out by the wizard. And the way to fight it is to just stop paying attention.
Yeah, I will add one caveat to that, and I'll use this by telling a semi-amusing anecdote from my childhood. I have some brothers, and like most children, we occasionally would yell and scream at each other. And it was the 90s, and there was a Vogue parenting thing at the time where, like, it was supposed to be like, when your kids are yelling at each other, they're just looking for attention, and the best way to get them to stop doing this is to ignore them for a little bit. And this was very hard for my mom, because my mom's the type of person who, she heard her kids yelling, she wanted to run there immediately. But so she was trying to listen to this advice, and she did it, and she was feeling really good about herself, and me and my little brother just kept yelling for her. And it turned out the reason we were yelling for her was because our television room was on a loft, and my little brother, for whatever fucking reason, like to sit on the loft perch while he was watching TV. And he was sitting on the loft perch, and he had fallen off, and I was holding on to him to keep him from, like, the 20-foot drop to the floor below. And my mom was sitting there trying to be like, you know, they're just looking for attention. I can't give it to them. And we're screaming, Mom, he's gonna fall! So most of the time, you want to deal with the wizard by ignoring them. Sometimes they've done something real bad, and you gotta go to and figure out and fight them. So just because you should mostly not process them, sometimes they've caused you to fall off a ledge, and you gotta do something about it.
Yeah, and I think the middle ground, the sensible, safe middle ground here is discuss it briefly and move on, right? Like, oh, the wizard's done a thing. It's probably this. Great. Let's not spend let's go back to that conversation that we were having before it became obvious there was a wizard in play, because we were on the verge of solving this person's information or whatever. As long as you're not neglecting all of the many, many other things and giving the wizard a disproportionate amount of attention, that's really all that matters. It's the same thing with someone who's been outed as a wraith. It's the same thing with someone who is a vizier. Like, you've solved a chunk of the game by knowing that they're in play. Have a brief discussion about how you collectively are going to deal with whatever problem that character is throwing up, and then move on and go on and solve the rest of the game. Because if you spend all your time working on the wizard, you're solving a part of the game that's really already been solved.
Our very clever listeners will have listened to us give this advice, and they will now be formulating extremely damaging wizard wishes that, when you ignore them, get really, really bad for the good team. So it's all,
I'm fine with that.
It's all a big circle, everybody. It's all a big
Let's have a sorceress arms race in the community. I'm up for that.
Do we have any other sort of general thoughts of Fighting the Wizard? I think we've said most of what I would want to hit.
Yeah,
but
it's difficult to say, really, isn't it? Because we can't be specific, because there are literally just an innumerable number of permutations here. So all we can do is generalize, and the general advice is, like, just that. Just, you know, don't waste your time with it. And there's not really a great deal else you can say, I don't think.
I agree with that.
Let people know if something happens to you. I think that's, like, another, like, piece of it. Like, if your role changes or if something weird is going on, people who have weird things going on should probably let each other know, like, let the town know that something weird is happening. But you don't have to make it the center of conversation. Just make sure you don't end up at the end of the game and nobody's talked about the weird thing that's happened.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk a little bit about storytelling the wizard.
Well, well, well.
I like to talk about...
This is
going to
be the topic.
normally, I like to talk about selecting a script first, but... The thing about Wizard is it's a wild card minion, right? So, in theory, it can go on really any script. It can be loud, it can be quiet, it can be a misinformation minion, it can be a survival minion. It doesn't really have a lot of script writing constraints, per se. Do either of you would disagree with that?
I think the only constraint would be if you're creating a script that you intend anyone but extremely experienced players to run or play in.
Yeah.
Other than that, no real constraints. That doesn't mean that I don't think that it doesn't belong in some places. Like, the Wizard is a bit like a very spicy seasoning. Sure, you can put it in anything, and I'm sure there's a market for it. I'm sure there's a market for obscenely spicy chocolate bars. But most people, but most people are probably not gonna want that. So you shouldn't just go throwing it in just because you like it and it's cool and it's fun. Because what the Wizard will become on any script that it's on is the main character of that script. It will be the thing that's most talked about. It'll be the thing that most feared. It's probably the thing that most people want to pull.
Like most, I like Ben's idea about like it being a spicy seasoning. And like most spicy seasonings, it doesn't want to compete for spiciness. It wants to be the big flavor. And so my word of advice would be to caution you from putting it with other things that are a big spicy flavor. And I think specifically, I would just think about putting it with Atheist and Amnesiac. I would just be cautious and look at your script and think about what it adds to the script in combination with those characters. They're all going to make a game where weird things might happen. So I just want to say, you know, think about those things and whether that's the game you want to run and whether that's the game that's going to be fun for your players. For some of us, that's going to be a game that we are going to absolutely love, and we're really interested in, you know, in that puzzle. And for others, it's just not.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess this goes into my sort of insanity. I don't disagree with any of that, but I'm going to make my lunch after we finish recording this episode. I'm going to put multiple different ghost pepper hot sauces on it. I think that's like for some groups, it's going to be fine. Like, the Wizard doesn't have inherently bad interactions, but you need to pick a script that's going to be fun for your group.
Yeah, I think if Wizard's on the script, then you have to assume that the players can handle anything else that might be on the script. And if the players are experienced and open-minded enough that they're happy playing a Wizard game, chances are they're probably also happy playing a Wizard Amnesiac Atheist Heretic script as well, because Wizard's spicier than all of those things anyway. You know, it's like, oh, okay, you're happy to drink an entire quart of whiskey. Would you like a small cup of beer as well? You know, like, that guy that's necking that is not going to care about the little bit of beer that they've got too, right? They're already much, much more inebriated and can handle much, much heavier alcohol in this weird analogy.
The point is, it's very spicy. Do, you know, put your seasoning where you want it, but, you know, maybe let your players know there's a spice warning, I guess, is the,
yeah.
You know, don't put ghost pepper hot sauce on the family's turkey for Thanksgiving or something. I know. No, there's probably a better way to say it.
Yeah. I feel like when running the Wizard, there are two big questions that most storytellers are going to have to ask themselves, and it's whether or not to say yes, and what if any, price/clue to include, right? Those are the two big ones, and they're really... That is difficult, because... When designing a game, you come across problems, right? A great example of this that we can all understand. when creating Blood on the Clock Tower, we don't want a bunch of villagers like there are in Werewolf or Mafia. We wanted everybody to have their own uniquely powerful ability, and we didn't want player elimination. Now, that creates a game design issue, because those games balance the fact that there's a massive good team versus a tiny evil team by eliminating some of those good team and making a good chunk of them just cannon fodder villagers or townspersons or whatever. And so we solve that game design issue by creating outsiders and by giving all of the minions some abilities as well. And all of a sudden we balanced it. And there's a million examples of that in Blood on the Clock Tower. The Wizard's kind of weirdly unique in that it basically says, okay, storyteller, we're going to demand that you solve a game design problem very quickly every single time you put this character in the bag. Because instead of Stephen Medway coming up with a way to balance the Wizard, he has instead said, let them make a wish, and then maybe it has a price and a clue if you feel it needs to. And that wish can create no game design issue at all. For example, your double poison thing is not a big deal. You don't need to think about how you're going to run that. The blueprints for it is already there. Not a problem. To something absolutely insane like everyone changes alignment, or someone, the first person to nominate is executed or whatever. That thrusts you into a position of having to solve a game design issue as a storyteller in an instant that no sane game designer would ever put themselves in, because it's fundamentally bad game design to allow the first person who's nominated each day to be executed. So it's a really fascinating conundrum and a unique one for storytellers, I think.
Yeah, I think, like, building off that, try to say yes to every wish, but don't be afraid to say no. I said no on a stream a few weeks ago, so I'll just use that as an example. The Wizard tried to wish that everyone in the game who didn't have a demon token became an evil wizard. And I thought about it for 5 seconds and said, I can't do that. We're not playing Clock Tower anymore. It's literally everyone in the game is on the evil team, and there's no good team, and they're all wizards. Like, it's not, we can't do that. That's not Clock Tower. You can have something else. And then the Wizard wished for everyone just to become a wizard, keeping their same alignment, which I'm not going to pretend was like what I had wanted out of that game when I started. But I was like, I can roll with that punch. That one's like one I can do. Because, yeah, it's a weird game of Clock Tower, but it's still Clock Tower. Like, everyone still gets their unique ability. There's still an evil team. There's still an evil team.
I'm so glad
that
happened to you and not me.
There's still an evil team and a good team. The cost of the wish was, it was started, had been a little monster game, and the player holding little monster at the time immediately became the imp was the cost, because otherwise I was going to have to wake up 12 wizards night 2 to decide who got to hold the baby.
That itself could have been the cost, I think. Just
does seem like a problem.
You know, deciding babysitters.
That was a wish. Like, the first version where everyone became evil and there was no longer a good team, that was a cost I couldn't quite roll with, because there was no more Clock Tower. But once the Wizard modified it to everyone was a wizard, I can't say I was happy, but I was like, I can make this work for you. And, like, I will make this work somehow.
Yeah, it's tough, because as GMs we are hardwired to say yes, or yes and, or yes but, right? We really want to do that, and it almost feels like if I feel like I have to say no, I feel like that's a failing of me. Like, I'm not smart enough to come up with a way to give you the thing that you want. And as GM, it's my job to give you to provide you with the experience that you want to have. But there are, it's important to cut yourself some slack and to acknowledge when your desire to be as accommodating as possible can actually result in you being unaccommodating to the other 11 players who want to have a normal game.
And I would argue that it's not necessarily even that you're not smart enough to come up with a solution for it or to come up with
a clue.
It's
not that at all. That's just good old-fashioned imposter syndrome, but, right? It's never... if you're successfully running this script on screen, you're smart. I'm telling you now, you're a pretty smart person.
But I was just going to say, even on top of that, it's that maybe you just can't come up with it in the 30 seconds that you have allotted for coming up with a solution to this wizard wish without delaying the game for 20 minutes while you nitpick the precise details of how you're going to sort this.
And here's my answer, Gosh, is you can do that part later. you can grant the wish and then rough out its sanded edges with a cost or a hint later. And if you realize 2 days later you needed a different cost because you forgot about some weird thing that the wizard wish did, probably unintentionally most of the time, you can change your cost and add that as part of the cost that it can't do that thing anymore. If you feel the wizard wish has been more powerful than you thought it would be and the good team is being beaten down by it, you can make a new, different, bigger hint than your original one. Like, the you have flexibility to respond to the wish as the game develops. There is no, like, rule that as soon as the wizard wish is made, you must have the precise cost and the precise hint ready and give the hint immediately. And the cost is the cost, and you can't change it. You, as the storyteller, can be flexible with those things to make it work.
And if the wish has had a big impact, you know, the wizard wishes on day one, and then, you know, on day four, you're like, wow, this wish has had a huge impact on this game. It's okay for the wish to expire, right? It's okay for you to go, you know what? The final three of this game is going to be more fun, more interesting, and more dramatic for everybody if this wizard wish ends before we get there, you know? And so it's okay to time limit a wish as well and say, hey, it's done. It's done its thing. It's not going to be the focus of this game at the very end.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would go so far as to say that not only is all of the things that you two have just said then okay, I would argue that that is the optimal and most sensible way to run the wizard. Like, be flexible with the way you react to wizard wishes. Not only should you not feel like you have to come up with your clue and cost straight away, it will make a better game if you just sit back and take the rest of the day phase and the night phase to think about it if you can afford to. It will make for a better game if you allow yourself to simply come up with things when you've got more information to work with. You're being a good GM, you're being a good storyteller by doing that, because ultimately it's going to make the game more balanced and more fun and more enjoyable for everyone.
Mm. Yeah.
Should we talk about clues a little bit and just sort of the how you give clues and how you think about them? Something that I know Emma and I we talked about the wizard with Ed in the past, and one of the things we talked about is the sort of awkwardness of if giving flavor to games of Clock Tower and having fun with your friends as a storyteller versus like giving a clue and making it really clear that there's a difference between you just having fun and, you know, narrating a game and, you know, giving it some flavor versus you giving a wizard clue.
Yeah, that is a hilarious thing, isn't it? When you'll be like, okey dokey, everyone, when do you come back to Town Square? They're like, Ned Flanders, is that a clue? Is this Simpsons related? Is everything yellow? And it's like, oh my God, I'm just being a human being. It's kind of a problem, isn't
just
it?
Just having fun with my friends.
Yeah. I think like most things with the wizard, the obviousness with which something you do or say is a clue is proportional to the strength of the wizard wish both the strength and the unexpectedness of the wizard wish, I'll say. If a wizard wish is really strong and extremely unexpected on the script you're playing, you probably need to make your clue extremely clear that it's a wizard clue. If the wish is going to be obvious anyway, like if the wish is going to be obvious, any clue you're doing is just for the fun of doing a clue, and it can be as subtle or loud as you want it to be. It's for the fun of doing the clue. If the wish is... Yeah, like, so... You shouldn't change who you are as a storyteller to be too afraid of your players not misinterpreting something as a clue. But you should make sure that if there's an actual wizard wish that needs a serious clue, you find some way to make that clear to your players.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think consistency is key, right? If you've decided, for example, that your clue is going to be that you, I don't know, sing a lyric from a Beatles song right before you go to sleep or something, and on the first day you say "Oakley Doakley," everyone come sit down, and everyone's like, "Oh my god, Ned Flanders, that must be the clue." That doesn't matter because you're gonna sing that Beatles lyric before they go to sleep, and you're gonna do that the day after, and you're gonna do that the day after that. So as long as you're consistent and clear, just like with any storytelling, really, as long as you're consistent and clear, you'll probably be okay. And it's not your job to dissuade people that little quirks of your personality are not a clue. That is part of the fear of wizard being on a script. That's part of the wizard's innate ability that it causes people to go looking for clues. And it's not something that you need to discourage. It's just something that you mustn't try to back up if people start barking up the wrong tree, as it were.
The baseline, like, wizard wish clue, and then you're going to modify this, right, like, to the standard of what you think the clue should be. And this is in the wiki, by the way, is the wizard has used their wish. Like, that's the baseline clue, right? The wizard has used their wish. You're going to adapt that based on how obvious the wish is, how much of a clue you want to give, right, which direction you want to kind of take this in terms of subtlety or obviousness, what theming you want to add around what the effect of the wish is, right? And so, you know, I think, like, that's your thought starting point. I think sometimes people try to be too cute with the phrasing of a wizard clue to, like, make it subtle or make it, you know, fun or funny, and that's awesome. And I think you should absolutely do that. I think you should make wizard clues fun and interesting and related to the wish. But, like, just remember that the baseline where you're starting is you're telling the town that something weird has happened. The wizard has done a thing. That's like the baseline of information that you're providing.
This is probably going to be a controversial opinion, but I, to some degree, view the part of the wizard's ability that says, if granted, it might have a price and leave a clue to its nature, as being not a million miles away from the plus zero to plus one outsiders on a balloonist, or plus the damsel on the huntsman's token, in that it needs to be there mechanically. Because you need, especially with huntsman damsel, you can't put a huntsman in the bag without the damsel. So the wording needs to be there. But generally speaking, you don't want to be having a huntsman add a damsel because the huntsman is a townsfolk. And you actually want the huntsman to be a reaction to the existence of the damsel. And I feel somewhat similarly about the wizard in that in a perfect world, you wouldn't need to be having prices and clues, because your wizard is a really smart person who's come up with a brilliant idea for a minion ability that's exactly the right level of power for an average minion ability, and that leaves its own clue, and therefore you don't have to do any of those things. And so, obviously, sometimes you're going to have a price and a clue, but the Platonian ideal of a wizard wish is one where you don't, at least from my perspective.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I kind of agree with that, actually. Most of the time, the ideal is that either the wish is balanceable enough with cost that you don't really need to give a clue because it's subtle, and sort of revealing the subtle wish in some way breaks the wish, or the wish is so obvious that the clue is sort of redundant, right? And I kind of do agree with you on that sort of being like a really good balancing factor.
Yeah, I mean, like, for example, with your two poisoners thing, that doesn't really need a clue. Maybe it needs a bit of a cost if it really is, like, choking out all of Talon's information, but you certainly don't need to be having a cost immediately. You can wait and see. There was a game where I was the wizard and I wished to become the storyteller alongside the real storyteller, and thus I was still bound by the game's rules, but I could make decisions for my own team. That didn't need a clue, because it was the opposite end of the spectrum. It was so bombastic and big. Emma's example of the second nomination of each day causing a death, that doesn't need a clue. Like, that is a wizard wish that's doing that. You might have a clue as to specifically the wording of it.
Yeah, I gave a clue the first time just because it wasn't a witch script and, like, people weren't expecting to die when nominated, so I was like, hey, you really sure you want to do that?
Yeah, and that's a great clue.
Like, and then after that, I kept doing it because it was fun. but, like, if witch had been on the script, I wouldn't have clued it at all.
And I think ultimately what you touched on there is the best thing about the price and the clue. They're fun. Like, as storytellers, we like coming up with things like that, where, you know, we're all dungeon masters at heart. We want to come up with little bits of witticism and poetry, and we want to inject our own monsters and mechanics into the game. And so coming up with prices and clues it scratches an itch that we all have. So that's the best reason, I think, to have prices and clues, just because they're fun and entertaining for everybody.
Yeah, a lot of the time when I thought a clue wasn't super necessary, especially in person, I'll just start, like, playing a song relevant to the wish on my phone, and some people will hear it and be like, all right, what's going on here? But, like, yeah, like, if the wish... But I'm mostly doing that because it's fun.
Yeah. And it's okay as the storyteller to have fun, contrary to some popular opinion. I don't know how valuable it is to build a bag with wizard here.
It doesn't have an ability, right? So yeah, we can't really talk about building a bag around its ability. I think, yeah, it's so open that really there's literally nothing to say until we know what the wizard wish is, at which point I'm afraid you can't really do anything about the bag that you built 3 days ago.
But I feel like we've done that already, because we've talked about wishes, whether examples of wishes we've seen or hypothetical wishes we'd consider, and talked about how it would cost and clue them. And that's sort of what you need for the wizard, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That is the wizard's bag. It's got its own bag. It's full of spell components.
Bat guano.
In people's imaginations.
Yeah, I don't know. Do either of you have sort of any kind of wrap-up kind of thoughts about the wizard? I feel like we've done it really solid justice here and really talked through, for a character that doesn't have an ability, we've really talked through a lot of potential possibilities, interactions.
I think, yeah, my like closing thoughts or closing advice on the wizard would be this. The wizard is the most deadly boss in the most deadly dungeon that's designed for the highest level characters in the MMORPG that is Blood on the Clock Tower. You might be tempted to go and experiment with it really early. I would strongly advise you to view the wizard as the end goal, something that you do when you've exhausted many of your other curiosities about Blood on the Clock Tower. Really, much like atheists, it requires a storyteller and a set of players that have a almost encyclopedic knowledge of what can happen on a script in order for them to detect and understand what it is, how it is that the wizard is changing that. And so it's fun, it's great. We've spent the whole of this podcast talking about how much we love it and we've been bigging it up. But also, it is very, very spicy. You know, you want to eat some still spicy but less spicy food to get your tongue ready for when you finally consume spicy wizard games. So just a little word of caution at the end of a very long endorsement.
Think about how spicy people look at Heretic and think it is. Heretic is challenging because of the social aspects and a bunch of other things about it, and ultimately it sort of flips the outcome of the game. But Heretic just does one thing, and while that thing is challenging for players to interact with, it is mechanically very clear to you as the storyteller what that one thing it does is. It ultimately reverses the outcome of the game. Wizard can do anything, and you have to adapt to it. And that makes it probably the hardest character to storytell, because you don't know on day one, on night one, when you put it in the bag, what it's gonna do. And that is very hard.
Heretic is plain white unbuttered toast compared to Wizard, as is every other character in Blood on the Clock Tower, except maybe Atheist.
Yeah.
And even then, Atheist is a distant second in terms of complexity, certainly for the players.
Yeah. I actually think Wizard is not as hard a storyteller as Atheist, Amnesiac, or Savant. But it is very hard to play, and it can be very hard to play with in ways that those characters aren't. And the reason for this is the same. The storyteller has so much less control over the wizard. And just try to remember, the goal of a game of Clock Tower, it's to win. You play games, but you don't play games to win. You play games to have fun, and trying to win is part of the way everyone has fun. If your wizard game wish isn't fun for the group, it doesn't matter if it's makes your team win. So remember that there's, you know, at minimum, in the smallest of teensies, four other players in a storyteller whose night matters, whose time matters. And at the biggest of the games, there's 19 other players in a storyteller whose time matters. And think about those things when you're making a wish. And make sure you're not so up your own asshole that you've forgotten that those are 20 other human beings.
Yeah. Wish for whatever you want, but don't make your wish cause other people to wish that you haven't made a wish.
Couldn't have said it better. Well, big thank you to Ben. Thank you so much, buddy, for coming on. We really appreciate you coming and spending time with us. This has been a blast. Get to talk about a great character that we all love and enjoy. Ben, would you like to roll out the red carpet for folks and give them a chance to say or, you know, shill for anything they want? Obviously, you have many things going on, but if you'd like to say anything here, this is your time.
No, not really. I mean, you know, come and check out the streams on Twitch and YouTube but you're probably already doing that. And if you're not, well, that's fine too. I'm just happy that you're here listening to us rant about the wizard. So have fun in your wizard games.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot.
What was that?
Thank you.
May your scenarios
Woo!
Stay grim.
Woo!